garçon. Ou pe trouver sans ou garé. Côté maman moins carré. Les ou passe belvédère. Vire à gauche, monte mon nom. Bon casse blanc, c'est pas comme ça. J'achète à la casse ou quoi.
Hello, my guys, gals, and non-binary pals. This is Panacea every fourth and fifth Thursday of the month from 2 to 3 p.m. And it's me, your host, Michelle. And this month's episodes, both this week's and last week's, are dedicated in loving memory to my friend Sean Samimi, who left his physical body in our earth too early. But his soul lives on, and his energy is part of the airwaves our show thrives on. Sean dedicated his life to helping others while also supporting himself in his healing and growth journey. And so we will continue to respect and honor his energy and honor his life and the lives of others who left this physical earth too soon. And so we're going to continue our conversation about loss and the nonlinear experience of grief. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about depression and its close relationship to experiences of loss and what some religious and cultural frameworks of meaning have to say about how to cope with loss and grief. And as well, we're going to talk about how we can support ourselves and how we can support others and in the experience of grief and the grieving process. So as always, let's begin with the song. This is This Feeling by Alabama Shakes.
Dream.
Okay, so what is loss? What is grief? What are the forms that it can take? And is loss slash grief synonymous with depression? And so we usually think of grief as the psychological process that one goes through following the death of a loved one. And there are typically four phases of a normal response to the loss, a normative response to the loss of a spouse or a close family member. These are numbing and disbelief, yearning and searching for the person, and disorganization and despair, which sets in when the person accepts the loss as permanent, and a reorganization as the person gradually begins to rebuild their life. And so these are phases of the response. They can, you know, reappear at different times throughout our journey, and they're not, not everyone goes through all four stages, and they don't go through them in the exact same order. And so when a loss occurred, it leaves a big hole in the emotional part of your psyche. And the psyche needs to reorganize itself to fill that hole, right? The reorganization that occurs as a person gradually tries to rebuild their life. And so we're going to sort of go through this journey. And this is a very Freudian take on the fact that, you know, a loss occurs and it leaves a hole in your psyche. And so psychodynamic theories like those supported or created by Freud note the similarity between symptoms of clinical depression and the symptoms seen in people mourning the loss of a loved one. And so Freud and his colleague Carl Abraham both hypothesized that when a loved one dies, the mourner will regress to the oral stage of development. This is a stage of development where an infant cannot distinguish the self from the other person. And so when a loved one dies, they will introject or incorporate that lost person into themselves, right? They cannot distinguish themselves from that lost person. And so they'll feel all the same feelings towards themselves as they do towards the person that they lost. And so when you're attached to someone, right, this theory, psychodynamic theories would argue that you love them, but you're also angry at them because your love for them allows them to have some sort of control over your life and your emotions and your behavior. And part of your psyche doesn't like that. And so when you lose that person, there's an internal conflict where maybe your anger played a role, or you're angry at that person for leaving, because anger also is a very strong emotion that's associated with grief, right? And so your superego shows up. It shames you for your anger. It's like, you shouldn't be angry like that. You shouldn't be feeling that anger. And so your subconscious anger gets turned against you. And that anger that you might be feeling for that other person will be turned inwards towards you. And then you'll also feel anger on your own because you're ashamed at feeling angry at that person. So when that anger gets turned against you, for Freud, this is when depression occurs, right? So depression for Freud occurs when anger is turned inwards. And this can take the form of self-deprecating thoughts, low self-esteem, and guilt, which are all psychological components of the experience of depression for many people. And so Freud also hypothesized that depression can occur in response to imagined or symbolic losses. So for example, if you're in school and you fail a test or you fail at a romantic relationship, for example, you may experience this symbolically as a loss of, I don't know, your parents' love, because Freud was obsessed with parents, you know. But while psychodynamics theories do not hold up in the support and evidence for these theories, right, in the regression to the oral stage and the internal your anger gets turned inwards, the most important contribution of these psychodynamic approaches to depression is their noting of the importance of loss, both real loss and a symbolic or imagined loss. This loss is important to the onset of depression, and there's a lot of striking similarities between symptoms of mourning and symptoms of depression. But this isn't always the case. So a lot of studies on those experiencing the loss of a spouse or a life partner or a parent reveal that around 50% of people experiencing loss will actually show genuine resilience in the face of loss, with minimal, very short-lived symptoms of depression or bereavement. And so in contrast to what was previously thought, right, people just thought, oh, well, if you're doing fine after you lose someone, right, it's actually not because you're resilient. It's because you're emotionally maladjusted. You don't know how to, you know, process your emotions, or you were actually unattached to the person that you lost. And that's not true. They actually, they're not emotionally maladjusted or unattached. It's because they show a lot of genuine resilience. And in fact, mild and brief depression may actually be normal, quote unquote normal, or expected and adaptive in the long run by slowing us down, right? These mild depressions sometimes save us from wasting a lot of energy in the futile pursuit of unobtainable goals. It causes us to slow down and take care of our body and respond to our needs and be a little bit more intentional with our time and our energy. And so normal or normative depressions would be expected to occur in people undergoing painful but common life events like significant personal, interpersonal, or economic losses, right? Because we all experience these abnormal or maladaptive behaviors, patterns of thinking, emotions, and thoughts. We all experience them. It's just like the range of impairment that these symptoms confer to us that might be indicative of something more than just a normative experience. And so depressive symptoms tend to peak 2 to 6 months after the loss. And there's been a lot of discussion on if we should think of grief as a process that's different from major depressive disorder, because grief is more of a natural process, right? And so if a person has sustained a significant loss and it seems like they're just going through the grieving process, we should wait before offering a diagnosis of major depressive disorder to make sure that the person actually has MDD and isn't just simply grieving. So there's been a lot of debate surrounding the DSM-5 criteria for diagnosing someone with major depressive disorder. And so, yeah, that was just a little aside that I wanted to bring up. There's also something called adjustment disorder, which is a psychological response to a common stressor. These common stressors can be things like divorce, the death of a loved one, or the loss of a job, and result in clinically significant behavioral or emotional symptoms. And so your symptoms must begin within 3 months of the onset of the stressor for a diagnosis to be given. And this is the mildest and least stigmatizing diagnosis a therapist can assign to a client. And so this just basically tells you that you're having a hard time adjusting to the onset of a stressor in your life, and your symptoms will actually lessen or disappear when the stressor ends or when someone learns to adapt to the stressor. And so if someone's failing to adapt to the stressor, or if the stressor, you know, lessens or you move further in proximal distance, whether that be like temporal or spatial from the stressor, and you're still experiencing these symptoms, that might be indicative of something like a prolonged grief response, that's more of a maladaptive adjustment or response to grief. So grief and the symptoms of grief then can manifest themselves in many different ways. And these can include, you know, physical symptoms like feeling a lack of energy or fatigue, having headaches or an upset stomach, or changes in your appetite, you know, having a low appetite or very high appetite. And there's also changes to your sleep patterns and your circadian rhythms. So excessive sleeping or overworking and engaging in excessive activity. There's also emotional symptoms like memory lapses, feeling like you're distracted or preoccupied all the time, right? There's some sort of emotional cloud over your cognitive abilities. You're feeling irritable a lot. You're experiencing a low mood or feelings of euphoria. And you're also you can feel extreme anger or feelings of being resigned to the situation. And there's also spiritual symptoms, right? There's feelings of feeling closer to God, or feelings of anger and outrage at God or whatever deity that you choose to believe in. There's a strengthening of your faith. Just in generally, there's a strength. There can either be a strengthening of your faith or a questioning of your faith, because a lot of grief results in a search for meaning. So this could include turning to religion for strength or other frameworks or other cultural frameworks of meaning. You could be questioning traditional beliefs or looking for new ways of understanding life and death, like some of the perspectives that I talked about last week, and some really cool insights from physics. And so Andrew Garfield, the actor, actually said something really insightful about the experience of grief following the loss of his mother. He said that grief is all of the unexpressed love that he didn't get to tell his mom, and that when we grieve, we're not only mourning the loss of our loved one, but the loss of the future that we imagined with them in it, and the loss of the time that we didn't get to spend with them. And I think that's really beautiful, right? Because we're still experiencing this grief, and it still fucking sucks, but, you know, reframing it in a way that talks about it using more positive, in a more positive light, can be a very cathartic or consoling way of experiencing grief. So let's listen to another song, because this is Daydream in Blue by iMonster. And it's not playing, so give me one second.
shape and make the flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day. The flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day.
Okay, let's get to chatting more. In many cultures, so we're going to talk about some perspectives on how to support others in grief from some of the cultural frameworks and frameworks, other frameworks of meaning that we talked about last week. So in many cultures, particularly in the developing world, the old identities of those of the bereaved do not die with the deceased, but are resurrected with every commemorative service of the loved one. So every time that we remember those that we have lost, we preserve their memory and their identity. And so our identities are renewed and grief is openly expressed on a recurring basis. And the expression of grief is what allows those memories to live on. And so the Anishinaabe or Ojibwe tribe have healing ceremonies, which include the pipe ceremony, special medicines, and sacred songs that all work together to heal the spirits and hearts of family members. So sacred messages of comfort and courage come from the pipe. And in these ceremonies, the creator spirit messengers enter the lodge and will bring messages and dreams and visions to family members. And they work to lift grief from the heart. They work to lift confusion from the mind, and they heal the physical effects of grief. And so these healing ceremonies are very important to help family, friends, and clan members in letting go of the spirit of the deceased. And if this grieving cycle is not complete, the grieving person may walk through life either emotionally wounded or mentally challenged as life progresses, right? So they're going to face a lot more difficulties if they don't complete this grieving cycle. the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois tribe believe that there are no tribal, language, or cultural barriers that separate the dead from us. And so they actually believe that the dead have power, and it's considered very dangerous to neglect the spiritual needs of those who have passed. So we must have respect for them at all times because they coexist with us. And much of the Haudenosaunee tradition, including their law and government, reflects this essential duality or dichotomy of the world, right? There's light and dark, there's old and young, and there's good and bad. And when a person dies, they believe the world is also divided into two, right? Between the people whose minds are grieving or clouded, and the clear-minded ones who are their friends. And these people carry the obligation to first respect and make room for the grief that the people whose minds are grieving or clouded are feeling. And then they also have the obligation to then raise those minds up again. And so a quote-unquote clear-minded person is the one who is responsible for reminding the family that life goes on and that we can let the spirit of the deceased person go on its journey. And so we can see in these two conceptualizations of healing and the grieving process, right? It's very important to be around family and friends and other members of the community because the healing process occurs all together. We all support each other in our healing process. It's important to lean on each other. And it's also important to celebrate, you know, the grieving, the life of the person who has passed, and also completing that cycle, right? Letting them go and letting them move on in their spiritual journey and us moving on in the progression of life. In Buddhism, samsara, which is, again, the circle of birth, life, death, and rebirth, death is a necessary part of the process. We need to be able to experience death to be able to reborn, to be able to be reborn, it's a tongue twister, so that we can continue working towards achieving enlightenment. And so Buddhists also subscribe to this idea of anicca, or impermanence, right, that we talked about last time, right? Everything in life changes. The only constant is change. My grade 9 geography teacher told me that if I took one thing away from our class, it was to remember that the only constant is change. And that is the only thing I took away from her class. So I guess that worked. I also remember that she called me McDonald's Michelle, which was fucking annoying because I only brought McDonald's class twice, but whatever. So in this way, death is viewed as a transition, right? As a change from one form of being to another. And this is at the center of Buddhist beliefs, that everything is impermanent. And so suffering comes from our inability to accept impermanence, right? And while we may not all resonate with the idea of letting go of all of our worldly attachments, right, of being attached to nothing, we can all appreciate the idea that suffering is universal. And this can teach us, and I hope that it will teach us, to hold a lot of love and gratitude for the time that we have with things and people and places, because they won't be here forever. And it also reminds us that grief will not last forever because everything is impermanent. Right, but logically, I can tell you that I can say all of these things. I can tell you that with time, things will pass. Right, we can know that nothing matters. We can know that everything is temporary. But emotionally, right, we as humans are not logical beings. First, we're emotional beings. Right, there's an emotional valence to everything that we do. And so emotionally, we can feel crushed by like this impending doom of like everything that has ever happened and everything that will ever happen to me. Right. So there's a story about Yubiri, who was one of the first women Buddhists, and she lived in the palace of a king, and her and this king had a child, and she gave birth to a child named Jiva, which means, whose name means alive. However, shortly after, her daughter died, and Yubiri was drowning in her grief, and so every day she went to visit her daughter's burial site, where they buried the cremated remains of her daughter's body. She went to visit her daughter's burial site every day and wept for her. And one day, the Buddha was passing through her town, and heard Yubiri crying out for her daughter and asked her what was going on. Yubiri replied, saying that her daughter had passed and that she was mourning and grieving for the loss of her daughter. And so he pointed to the burial site where another had been buried and pointed to another burial site where someone else was buried. And he said, "Jiva, my daughter, you cry in the woods. Come to your senses, Yubiri. 84,000 all named Jiva have been burned in that charnel ground. For which of them do you grieve?" And so he's just illustrating the fact that, you know, grief is universal, right? We can take a powerful lesson from the story because grief is universal because impermanence is universal. And so because grief is shared by all of us, we can find ways to support each other and ourselves through a place of connection and understanding, right? There is not just one Jiva that has been burned in that charnel ground. There's not just one Jiva buried there. There are 84,000. And so we can all share. We're not the only ones experiencing this immense pain and this immense loss. So because it's shared by all, we can find ways to support others and ourselves while also doing the same work. I don't know if that's making sense. So let's song, and then let's talk about how we can support ourselves and others in grief. This is Everything Happens to Me by Errol Garner. It's instrumental, which I don't think I've ever done just an instrumental song on the show, but I think the title of the song makes sense for what we're going to talk about after. So let's enjoy. Sorry, my roommate texted me about something in reference to the male gaze, and I got really passionate about it. Anyways, so my goal here is not to take away your grief or do the work for you, right? Grief teaches us that suffering is not transformed or taken away by someone telling us how to do it or how to get through it. We have to do the work ourselves. But a friend can bear witness and help us, you know, shine some light into the darkness of our suffering, and in this way help us to learn and support us through our journey of growth. And so choosing to experience your grief and choosing to lean into it is one of the bravest and kindest things that you can do for yourself. But it's fucking scary, so you don't have to do it right away. And not everyone experiences grief to the same extent. And so it's okay for you to shove those feelings down for a while. It's okay for you to avoid them and engage in other behaviors, right? I'm not here to criticize or judge the way that you choose to embark on your healing process, but I'm here to offer support no matter where you are in your journey and take you on my journey as well, because I don't want to do this alone. And I know that I'm not alone, because we can do it together. And so what's interesting is that in the quote unquote Western way of dying, right, the experience of death and dying is also a business. It's commercializable. And so after death, while juggling grief, right, We also have responsibilities like looking for a funeral home, letting other friends and family know a death has happened, creating a funeral service, thinking about health insurance, about life insurance, about taxes, about the last will and testament, right? These are all things that take up a lot of our time and energy and are things that we have to think about. And these endless rites of what seems like is necessary for closure can be a way of to avoid confronting the depth of our losses, because it's fucking scary to experience such intense emotions. And in his A Grief Observed, C.S. Lewis writes that no one ever told me that grief was so much like fear. I am not afraid, but the sensation is like being afraid. The same fluttering in the stomach, the same restlessness, the yawning. I keep on swallowing. And so a lot of the times we want to swallow our grief. We want to avoid experiencing those hard emotions. And we devote a lot of time and energy into things that might be related to the grief, but we aren't directly addressing. And so sometimes when you don't make space for grief, right, your body will take that space, and your body will take it at times that might not be the most convenient for you. And so it's important for us somewhere along our process to lean into our grief and to experience those emotions and feel them and ride the wave. But this can be hard because this grief is invisible to others, right? We think that other people don't know what we have to deal with. They don't know what we have to grow around. And so when we experience grief, we might feel as though only I know this pain, right? I'm going through this. This is not fair to me. Why is this happening to me? I'm like suffering. I have to deal with all of this. I have to pick up all the pieces. And this can cause us to resent people who say, oh, this too shall pass, or there's no death, or there's only transformation, or anything basically that I've been saying, right, this whole show. That can cause a lot of negativity and cynicism surrounding those things, because we're like, well, they don't understand what I'm going through. And yet what we can take from Buddhism and just from, you know, practicing empathy in general is that grief is shared by all, right? Whether that be personally experiencing grief or just seeing your friends going through the grieving process, right? Grief is an experience that's shared by more than just one person, and this opens up opportunities for connection, for love, and for peace to arise out of grief. And so one of the most important things you can do for yourself when you are grieving, or the most important thing you can do for a friend who is grieving, is to allow space for connection, for presence, and for leaning on somebody. And so all the articles that I've been reading, you know, about what to do when you're experiencing grief, what is grief, what is the process of grieving, right? We can summarize everything that you can do into three main groups. There's moving your body, moving your heart, and connecting with someone. Moving your body means like moving your, going outside, going on walks, right? Keeping up with your daily routine, staying in tune with your body and listening to what it needs, taking the extra time and the extra space and recognizing that things might be slower for you at this period in your life than they were usually before, and they might be slower after, right? Being able to wake up and do the mundane tasks of life as Sisyphus does, because that's the only way that we can get through things. It's like, reminds me of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, right? Eeyore is generally a very melancholic, sad little donkey, but, you know, he always... And regardless of him being sad, right, his friends still invite him out to outings. They accept the fact that he's sad. They let him be, but he's there and he's in others' presence. You know, he's making an effort and he might not be enjoying it all the time. But he's trying. And I think that's really awesome. So think of Eeyore. Moving your heart means doing things that you're passionate about that bring you joy and happiness. And this also means doing things that make you feel connected to the person that you lost, right? That help you honor them and celebrate them and remember them, and that help their memory live on. Expressing your feelings either through your words or even by moving your body, right? Or creating art, doing something that gives you catharsis, journaling, talking out loud about it, drawing about it, finding songs that resonate with you about it. Or like dancing, moving your hips, releasing that tension in your body, because a lot of tension is stored in your hips. And so when we move our hips, we release a lot of that stored tension, right? Just doing something to honor your feelings and giving them a space to be and to thrive and to be let out. And somewhere along the line, we can also try and find meaning, right? Practicing introspection and reflection, finding meaning about what this grief is teaching us about ourselves, what this grief can teach us about our interactions in the future, and what this teaches us about what we value in life and what we want to continue valuing in life, right? Finding a balance between being able to lean into our grief, right? Being able to choose to experience our grief while also being able to choose to lean into life, and dedicating time to living is very important for our well-being. And this can often come with a lot of self-deprecating emotions, because, you know, we're feeling guilty and we're feeling shame about enjoying life without this person here. We're feeling guilty about feeling happiness without this person here. We're feeling like we shouldn't be happy because we should be mourning. And those are very valid and true feelings that happen a lot and for a lot of people. And so it really is hard to navigate finding that balance. But by moving your body and by moving your heart and being in tune with your body and your emotions and what it needs, you'll be able to carve out your own path, in which a balance between leaning into grief and leaning into life is most productive for you. And so the hard questions and emotions and thoughts that come with grief, that come with loss, are despairing, right? They can cause us to lose hope. It's really defeating to picture a world without the person that you lost. And it's angering to think of the unfairness of the world, of why we suffer, of why bad things happen, right? It's unfair, and it's very easy to get lost in the cynicism and the negative emotions, which is why we need something to keep us grounded, right? In where we are and what we want things to be. We have to stand in that gap, that uncomfortable gap of where we are and where we want things to be. So that we're motivated to inspire change and do something about it. And so we need something to keep us grounded. We need some sort of meaning to connect to, because without it, we'll get lost in the cynicism, or we'll get lost in the idealism. And this is why people hold on stronger to their belief systems when they're reminded of their own mortality, right? Remember that study that I talked about last week with the judges, when they did a questionnaire that reminded them of their own mortality, they set stricter bail bonds. I don't know. They set stricter bond amounts because they wanted to hold tightly to their belief system, to their belief that they need to uphold justice and uphold the law. And so when reminded of their own mortality, we cling tighter to our beliefs. And the last one, so moving your body, moving your heart, and connecting with someone. Connecting with someone doesn't necessarily mean you have to talk about your grief and you have to talk about how sad you are all the time, because sometimes you don't want to talk about it, right? The simple act of connection is enough. You can share positive memories about the person that you lost with them. You can go do activities together. You can sit at home together. You can cry together. You can sit in bed and play video games together, right? Just laughing together, as long as you have someone else to do things with and you're not doing it all alone. That's the important part, right? Just feeling connected to your people, feeling a sense of community and unity, and perceiving like you have a strong support system is very important, regardless of what you're talking about when you're feeling supported. Yeah. I don't have a lot to say, and I feel like what I'm saying is very heavy, so I really do want to break this up with another song. This is a song that I found. I love going on Spotify and seeing what my friends are listening to and then listening to their songs. So shout out Dre for showing me the song. This is Dream About Me by Moby. Thank you. Okay, so grief is this uncomfortable, intense emotion, and grieving is the process of experiencing grief. It occurs over time, right? This process happens over time. And so grieving is a learning process. It's you learning how to continue in the world when someone you love is no longer in it. It's the process of you learning to adapt and to interact with others again, to love again, to experience happiness without guilt again. And so we have to learn how to operate in the world no longer as a we, right, but as a me, no longer as we, as in me and my mother, or me and my brother, or me and my friend, or me and my partner, but as a me. For example, someone who lost their father at a young age will experience grief at that time, right? But perhaps they will also experience grief again on their wedding day when their father isn't there to walk them down the aisle. And so we will continue to experience grief because grief is a normative response to loss, right? And the loss of our person is always going to affect us. And this is normative. It's natural and it will always happen. But grieving does not always, the process of grieving is not for a forever thing, right? Our relationship to our grief will change over time. We grow around our grief and we learn how to pick ourselves up over time and we learn how to do it better. And we learn how to regulate our emotions better and identify triggers. And so this doesn't mean that the loss is any better or any more acceptable or even bearable, right? It just means that we're better adapted to respond to the loss of our person because we've learned over time, right? Grieving is a learning process. And so the point of your support for somebody else or for even for yourselves, right, should not be to cheer people up or to even try and take away their pain, but to be present with them through it, to appreciate life, to appreciate their loved one's lives, right, to help them memorialize and share stories about their loved one, to cry about their loved one, to laugh, to be angry, and just generally to make space for the range of emotional experiences that come with loss, including and especially anger, right? Anger has a very unique association with grief in the sense that a lot of this anger, we don't know where to direct this anger to, right? We have a lot of anger about the unjustness of the world and about the unfairness of the loss and about, you know, someone being gone. And we don't know where can we place that blame, right? Where can we direct our anger to? Because there is nowhere to direct our anger to. We don't know why people leave us early, right? We can't. So holding that anger and not having anywhere to put it down can be very, very hard. And you can't and you don't know what someone else is feeling unless they let you in and provide you with that insight. And people don't have to share how they're feeling if they don't want to, right? And so the point of your support should be to sit and be there and to practice active listening, right? And so what is active listening? Active listening can be, you know, nonverbal engagers like nodding your head, right? Nodding your head, having open bodily, what is it called? Body language? Yes, body language, right? Being open in your body language, providing nods and mm-hmms so that to show that you are listening, and also just, you know, to recap and summarize what that other person is feeling and validating them. And so you can say, oh yeah, to me, it seems like you're especially upset because you had this planned, blah, blah, blah. Does that seem right to you? Or, and just sort of repeating what they're saying back to you, mirroring their emotions, validating them, telling them that they're okay, right? You're listening out of curiosity. You're coming from a place of curiousness. You're coming from a place of wanting to listen, right? Your job is to be an active listener and to not try and change someone's mind or sway their emotions in any way, but helping them explore their emotions is also something that's really helpful. So asking lots of open-ended questions and lots of questions that help them explore their emotions further are things that are really good characteristics of what makes a great active listener and what makes someone really feel heard and also then more willing to share. It's also really helpful to remind people that there is a future where they grow around their grief, right? Because a lot of the times it's very hard for us to picture that sort of future when we're going through it. And a lot of studies, a lot of social psychology studies have found that people actually overestimate how much an emotional event is going to affect them. And so how much in terms of like how much emotion that they'll feel. And they also overestimate the amount of time it'll take them to recover from that emotional event. And so we have a lot of cognitive biases that work against us. And it's important to have, and it's really helpful to have someone to remind them that there is a future where they grow around the grief and that they are capable of adapting because, as I said before, right, people exhibit genuine resilience in the face of loss. They obviously experience all of these normative depressions and these low moods, and they still experience grief, but people are very resilient. And sometimes we just need to be reminded of how resilient we are and the fact that we can do hard things. And that things just take time sometimes. And so that's all I got today. I know this is a very heavy topic and it's not something that I'm perfect about, right? This is a learning journey for me too. Grieving is a learning process and we're all learning together. So please be kind to yourself and be kind to others, right? You can do hard things and be proud of yourself for doing the best that you can. Even if that just means waking up and getting out of bed to go pee or something, right? It's the little wins that add up and accumulate into big wins. And we all have to start somewhere. So give yourself some acknowledgement because getting out of bed is really hard sometimes. And interacting with people is really hard sometimes, and wanting to do the boring fucking mundane shit of life is really fucking hard sometimes, right? Albert Camus told us this. Sisyphus teaches us this. Prometheus teaches us this, right? Yeah, that's all I got for today. It's a short episode. I hope you guys take care of yourselves. Check in on your friends. Tell your friends that you love them. Tell yourself that you love you. And I want to end with a poem by Henry Scott Holland. It's called Death is Nothing at All, I think. So here's the poem. Yes. Death is nothing at all. I have only slipped away to the next room. I am I and you are you. Whatever we were to each other, that we still are. Call me by my old familiar name. Speak to me in the easy way which you always used to. Put no difference in your tone. Wear no forced air of solemnity or sorrow. Laugh as we always laughed at the little jokes we enjoyed together. Play. Smile. Think of me, pray for me, let my name be ever the household word that it always was. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you guys next month for another segment. I think we're going to talk about accessibility and depression and accessibility in the workplace, living with mental illness in the workplace, and maybe we'll talk about suicide. I'm not sure yet. We'll figure it out. And let's end today with some songs. We're going to go through a series of songs. We're going to listen to Slipping Through My Fingers by Meryl Streep in the Mamma Mia version because it's my favorite. Hinoki Wood by Gia Margaret, and Passing Me by The Fairside. So here we go. This was Panacea on CKUT 90.3 FM. And Funning Drive for CKUT starts on March 15th, so be sure to look out for that. Donate what you can. The station really appreciates it. We're built on the support of our donors. And we love what we do, and we want to keep doing it. So even a little bit means a lot. And buy our merch. Our merch is really cool. Okay. That's all I have to say. I'm blabbing now. This is slipping through my fingers by Meryl Streep. If it'll fucking play, because I'm blabbing. Okay, bye.
School bag in hand, she leaves home in the early morning, waving goodbye with an absent-minded smile. I watch her go with a surge of that well-known sadness, and I have to sit down for a while. The feeling that I'm losing her forever, and without really entering her world, I'm glad whenever I can share her laughter, that funny little girl. Slipping through my through my fingers all the time. I try to capture every minute, the feeling in it, slipping through my fingers all the time. Do I really see what's in her mind? Each time I think I'm close to knowing, she keeps on growing, slipping through my fingers all the time. Sometimes I wish that
This is Spoonful of Slow by 9Lazy9 to close out our show.
Lord, I hunger and thirst for your word.